We kick off hour number two of the program. FoxSportsKnoxville.com is where you can find all of our predictions for the SEC tournament. Coming up later today, Tanner Carson of Overtime is handling that for us. And FoxSportsKnoxville.com is powered by 245 Tech, your web development company.
I'm on the site right now. It looks great.
Right here in Knoxville.
Liar.
Mm-mm.
I don't know what to do with Houston.
No, I'll be fine.
Should you... You're talking about game checks the other day. Should you...
I don't give a show check today.
We do like 20 shows a month, roughly, right? Like 5 days a week,
Thank God this is only a three-day tournament. Starts on Friday instead of Thursday. No. I missed two.
Thank you. You might get 19 20th.
This is local sports news. I mean, it's like the Super Bowl coming to town.
I'll let it slide because during voluntary reaction tonight, I'm probably going to be watching another game while that's taking place.
No, they go at the same time. We'll be done.
I thought one was at 9 and one was at 9:30.
No, they're exactly the same. Now, one might be a smidge ahead of the other, or if it goes to overtime or something. Yeah. Depends on how fast the 7 o'clock games go, actually.
It's very true.
That, too. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. 865-546-8200 to join the program. Talk a little SEC tournament. We've got Josh on the horn. What's up, Josh?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, first off, I heard you guys talking bass fishing on... I have to give my boy Dave Mullins a shout out.
Okay.
Churchill, Tennessee's finest. Made Northeast Tennessee proud. He's my boy.
Good for Mullins. That's nice. Josh, good job. I love it when people can insert a little fishing into the show. I know I do.
Hey, what do you think? You think Lamonte shows up down here in this tournament, or is it going to be the same Lamonte we've seen of late? What gets him turned around?
Josh, I don't know. I mean, his shooting percentage in conference play this year is down, was it like 10, 12 percentage points? I don't know if they're asking him to do more by running, you know, the point a little bit more, and now he's feeling like he has to kind of force his shot when he gets an opportunity. I don't know if it's the shoulder. I don't know. I don't understand it. His shots against Auburn were not good shots. I don't have a problem with him taking good shots, but he has been struggling from three. I'd like to see him do a little bit more of what he did against Ole Miss, which is dribble, make a move, create a little bit of space, and hit that, you know, 18-foot pull-up jumper, the 16-foot pull-up jumper, the 14-foot kind of floater. When he did that against Ole Miss, he dropped, what, like 12 straight points or something? It was unbelievable. I don't think any of those were from three. He's also good at attacking the basket, and he hasn't been doing that lately. So I think he needs to give up on the three, kind of the way Admiral did when he got into his slump, go inside a little bit more. No, not inside, because he's a little guy. But he just needs to try to create his shot inside the three-point arc and then let the three come to him. But last year he won you a lot of games by standing outside and burying big threes. I don't know, maybe the 6 days off, He gets some time to work things out, and he comes out playing tonight. I don't know. We were talking about that before the show. I would be tempted to start Jordan Bowden tonight based on how he played at Auburn and how Turner played at Auburn.
Yeah, you can't let Lamonte stand up there and go 1-for-9 or 2-for-9. It's going to kill us if that happens. So I don't know. I really like Lamonte. I like his toughness, but if he's not playing well, we just can't continue to let him throw up shot after shot. We've got to figure out something to, get the ball moving around a little bit better.
I agree.
I don't know.
And Josh, I think that's a little bit on Rick Barnes. Like, I think you need to have that conversation with Lamonte earlier in the game, and I don't know that he did that against Auburn. It never looked like it because he kept pulling and he kept shooting bad ones. I mean, we made reference to one late in the second half where Lamonte never even caught the ball, and I think he shot it off of his knuckles, and it was an air ball, I believe. Is that right, Davey? Did that one touch the rim? Or did it just – it maybe grazed the rim? It was a terrible, terrible shot.
I think
he's pressing a little bit.
It hit, but, God, it was
he's
awful.
Pressing, and we don't need him pressing. He's the opposite of Bowden. I want Bowden to shoot it the moment it touches his hands, whether he's set, looking at the rim, or whatever. Turner needs to see the rim and almost kind of step into his shot from three if he's going to make it. He's just not a great set shooter. He needs to he needs to eye the rim for a second. Bowden, I just want him to catch and fire.
Hey, I agree with you. But what I want to see is Jordan Bone take control like he did in the Kentucky game. I want to see him just take control of this offense. And when he does that, we're pretty hard to beat. And I'm kind of choosing to feel like you guys do at the moment after watching that Admiral video. Those guys are veterans. They've had, you know, one of the best careers I can ever remember as a basketball player at Tennessee, and I'm not going to doubt him. I hope they can win this thing. It's been since 1979, I believe, since we've won one, and carry some momentum into the tournament. But anyway, you guys take care. See you.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for the fishing reference, too.
Thanks for the call. I mean, I hope for Tennessee's sake the committee is still watching basketball. Unlike what Jay Billis said about how, oh, you already know who's good. Like, I mean, that's fine if you want to say the SEC has a slot no matter what. But I'm with Josh. I hope they show up. They kind of find that postseason. Like, it's time for Tennessee to benefit from being the older veteran team, right? Like, I mean, I won't say suffered because this team's been so good the last 2 years, especially compared to where they were 3 years ago and where even people thought they would be. But there's been some real dumb basketball and some sloppy, lazy basketball even a few times this season. And this should be the point in time where you benefit from having veteran players that have been in your program for 3 and 4 years. And Admiral Schofield, I mean, if you watch that Players Tribune video, you know it means everything.
And if you haven't, go watch it now. It's incredible.
I mean, he wants to finish this off. He says he already has no regrets, but I mean, he's going to play that way, I'm sure.
That's how I want him playing, which is good. I don't mind that. I mean, I think I understand what he's saying. You know, if you look at what maybe the expectations were when he signed here, no one expected a potential one seed by his senior year. No one expected what happened last year. No one expected this team, again, last year or this year, to be in the running for the regular season title, to be, you know, heading into the tournament with expectations of a Final Four, you know, realistic expectations of a Final Four. So in a way, he surpassed anything he probably dreamed of when he signed here. But I do think that this team, after last year and the way it ended, does have some unfinished business. And maybe that's why they struggled a little bit late in the year. Is it because they were... Look, I know the regular season championship is the championship. Like, that's the most important one in the eyes of the SEC. Like, that's number one. They got that last year. Is it possible this team was just champing at the bit for tournament play and we see an inspired next-level Tennessee come out tonight and for the next 3 days, and then we see that team in the NCAA tournament?
Gosh, I hope so.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hope so. I guess that's what makes the Auburn game so strange, is because that game, in a way, was a tournament game. You were playing for a share,
right?
You were playing for another title. You had a big second half lead, and then we saw kind of the dumb mistakes creep up and some of the, you know, lackadaisical turnovers and strange, lazy shot selection. That is what has me confused going into this, because that was a tournament type game, and that's not the play we expect from Tennessee in those types of games.
Now, I have fear. I have fear that's going to pop up at some point over the next potentially, what, they've got 9 games left max, right? 3 in this one,
yeah.
6 in the last one.
Right.
I mean, you've got 9 games left in this season, hopefully. And I don't know. It's weird. Like, obviously, there's going to be points over 9 games or even 3 games if you just want to look at this weekend where you're not going to be playing your best basketball. But there's some extra element of just oddity about the way they can go through a slump. It's like, I mean, it's normal for you to miss some shots at some points. It's normal for you to have like a bad pass here or there, but like they just seem to almost forget how to play basketball from it. Maybe it is because they don't have top end talent. Maybe top end talent just covers that stuff up. I was watching Duke Syracuse last night, and I was thinking, the Syracuse team, like, they don't play good basketball.
No.
Like, they're just a bunch of athletic guys out there on the court. They're just surviving this game because they're pretty good athletes. There's not a lot of great basketball being played here, really. They're just long and athletic, and they're built for that zone. And you know, they're talking about, yeah, they'll definitely be in the tournament. And I'm thinking, it really isn't that hard if you can recruit a bunch of guys like this to just throw them on the court and at least be middle of the pack in the SEC, ACC, and make the tournament.
Sure.
I mean, some of the guys they rolled out to play the post positions were really terrible basketball players.
The guy they had playing in the middle of the zone at one point due to foul trouble only weighed like 185 pounds.
Yeah, but he's, you know, 6'10 and whatever. And when they play, you know, a crappy ACC team, it's just good enough, right? But it's not at the top end.
Right.
And so, I don't know, maybe Tennessee's just in a weird spot where they have really good basketball players, but they're not supreme athletes. And so they just have to play at that edge, at that line. They just have to play for the entire, you know, more of the game than some other teams do. The other teams need to get away with a little more. They have to be on edge. They have to be playing their A game a little bit more often. Maybe that's why it shows up so obvious when, you know, Bone dribbles it off his foot and it turns into a run out. And I don't know. But then I argue with myself and go, but that's not really true. This team is really athletic.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Bone's one of the fastest guys in the country. Like Admiral Schofield is built like a tank.
I was gonna say
Grant Williams being a little short is about the only spot I really look at and say. I mean, Kyle Alexander is almost 7 feet tall.
I think it's a mentality thing, and that's what
maybe they just need to find that back. I mean, and hold it.
Well, that's what, you know, they're always at their best when everybody doubts them, and then it's like everyone started to believe in them, and I don't know. Did they say, well, we did something that no one thought we could do, and now we're good. Like, now everything is just gravy. Is that it? Were the goals not high enough? I mean, in the beginning of the season, Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield are saying, we want to hang banners, man. Like, we didn't come here to make the NCAA tournament. We didn't come here to get in, you know, the final of the SEC tournament. We came here to hang banners. Now's the time where you need to play like that. So that's why I'm wondering what team takes the floor tonight at 9:30, 9:45.
Well, if you don't win the SEC tournament or the NCAA, when there's nothing going in the rafters this year.
Except Grant's jersey, eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Like, that doesn't count. Don't count that, Grant. He said he didn't want individual awards. He said he wanted team awards banners in the Raptors.
I was looking at a lot more mock drafts yesterday, and he is still rising.
Maybe, I mean, maybe Tennessee. Don't tell anyone. I don't know. Maybe the perfect situation is I don't care which one. I mean, obviously, I would rather, for this discussion, it doesn't really matter. But if Tennessee wins the SEC tournament and then, like, still gets a two, and they give, like, three ACC teams ones, maybe that's the best scenario. Maybe Tennessee can play their way through the SEC tournament with everybody doubting them, play really well and win it, and then they get a two. And it's like, yeah, Tennessee won it, but we had kind of already penciled them in as a two. We don't think they're as good as – we don't think they're as athletic as North Carolina, mm-hmm. or they don't have a player as good as Zion, and Virginia's just too consistent. Tennessee's not that. And, you know, Gonzaga, their body of work, and you got a Tennessee team that's just, like, hornet mad as a two and just – go, you know, just burns through the South region and goes to the Final Four. Maybe that's the best case scenario. But I mean, I don't like losing games so that you have a chip on your shoulder. Like, at some point, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah,
you
like
lose
that,
a game and you're done.
That's the self-inflicted adversity that just doesn't really work. That's
right.
Maybe,
don't pick us.
I mean, that's a thing, right? Like, I don't know. And maybe what you said to kind of start the segment, maybe that'll happen. Maybe we thought it would be good that they got to number one and had to play with everybody's praise being heaped on them, because at least they now know what that feels like. If they do win the SEC tournament and they're a number one seed and everybody's, you know, and Jimmy Dykes is like, yeah, I'm picking Tennessee in my Final Four, or if you got the media members on Selection Show saying, look out for Tennessee, I think they'll make the final now that they're on the opposite side of Duke, or whatever the case is, you know, maybe that experience in the middle of the season will help them handle that and go, okay, some people like us, but we still better play with a chip on our shoulder. We still better play as the underdogs, or we're going to get beat like we did and get knocked off our perch during the regular season. I mean, that's at least the way the mentality should be. And it starts tonight, because if they play sloppy again, if they play like they did against Auburn, I mean, there's a chance Mississippi State can even beat you. I know that didn't work out too well the last time. It was at Thompson Bowling Arena, and Tennessee's been great at home all year. But it's a different animal when you go to neutral site games.
State got a little momentum too.
How much of the crowd? You'd have to factor in that Kentucky will be playing before you, but what do you think for the Tennessee-Mississippi State game, you kind of get as far as cheering, like, say, 60-40 Tennessee?
No, I mean, all the Kentucky fans there will be cheering against them, right? I mean,
yeah.
Kentucky fans who stay for the next game aren't going to be rooting for Tennessee. They'll probably be cheering. I don't know. Kentucky usually has more than 50% of the tickets.
But Tennessee's not been that good whenever we've been in this situation.
I understand that, but Kentucky fans buy these tickets years in advance. So it may not. I'm not saying this isn't the most interested Tennessee fans have been for an SEC tournament in a long time. I'm just saying that doesn't mean that there were tickets available to buy.
Yeah, I wonder. My guess would just be 50-50, maybe even a little more. You'll have 20% of the fans will be Mississippi State fans that they got through their school once they were in, plus a few, you know, that scalp them in. You'll have the 20% Tennessee fans that got them to the ticket agency. Then you'll have probably another 30-40% of that arena tonight will be Tennessee fans that, once they found out Tennessee would be in this game, have started buying up those tickets. But the rest of the arena, like, Kentucky fans will be pulling for Mississippi State. Anybody else that bought a full book, and just there watching, like LSU fans or
I'm curious
Auburn
to see if Alabama would be more inclined to Tennessee winning or Mississippi State.
Well, if you're an Alabama fan, you're leaving if you lose. So
win, they're going to want Mississippi State. No question.
Well, then Kentucky fans are just getting out of there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if Kentucky loses, then the arena will be not empty, but not as many people will be in it for sure.
Well, this is a whole, like, phenomenon that people always talk about. Like, there's no way to know what these tournament atmospheres become because you don't know who's won or lost earlier in the day. Like, if Kentucky does lose, there's going to be a lot of Kentucky fans that'll be mad and just storm out, and there'll be a lot of Tennessee fans trying to buy up those tickets for Saturday. But if they win and they hang around and they start booing Tennessee or whatever, and then the underdog always gets the completely neutral people. The underdog always gets those fans, but then that's balanced out by the fact that it's in Nashville. You're gonna have a lot of Tennessee fans today that'll probably just walk over to the arena and see if they can get in. So there's just no way to really know, but it is kind of fascinating.
And if you've never been, the way these tickets usually work is since you buy in 2-game packs, and so you'll have a ticket for, usually you can determine which team you're there for or which game primarily, and so you'll have a different seat for the first game versus the second game. So I remember before Tennessee, gosh, this would have been 2016, Tennessee ended up playing Vanderbilt, and I believe Arkansas Florida was the game before, and I was in the nosebleeds for that game, but then I got to come down for the lower bowl for the Tennessee game.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize they could be split within the same session.
I'm trying to remember if that was a student ticket or not.
No, well, that could change it.
I'm trying to think it probably was.
Well, if you're not going to to Nashville today and you're looking for a place to watch the game, you can join Hops and Hollers for March Madness today. Happy hour, 2 until 6. Tennessee, Mississippi State, of course, around 9:30 in the SEC tournament. And if you go to Hops, make sure you register for the Founders Brewing Kegerator giveaway when you watch the game there. It's Hops and Hollers, 937 North Central Street, right there in North Knoxville, a Tennessee bar doing Tennessee things.
It's going to be lit tonight.
Jerry Palm did update his bracketology finally.
All right.
He was slacking, but it's finally up.
He had to stay up late and watch those Pac-12 games probably. Get all the work in.
Yeah, because that mattered.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because the Pac-12 is one of the few power conferences where, like, who wins the tournament's really going to matter, because they're talking about Washington. Like, if Colorado beats Washington, I think today, Washington might be left out. They were the one seed going in.
Washington could get left out?
That's what they were talking about.
No way.
No. I mean, Arizona State's at least, like, they're a bubble team.
I don't know. That's just what they were talking about on the broadcast last night. And, of course, you know, Jay Billis is all in on Colorado winning it. They're the five seed. And, of course, everyone outside the Washington is basically playing for their life. Like you said, Arizona State might be out unless they win it.
I think they've been the play-in game for about 2 months now.
Is that in the tournament? Do we count that?
Is
the field 68?
Yeah.
Then why do they call it the play-in game?
You're not supposed to. You're supposed to call it the first four. Mm. Yeah.
Then why is the next round called the first round?
Because
have they changed it to the round of 64?
They tried to start calling that the second round. They tried to start going first four is the first round, and then the actual first round is the second round. But it was so confusing to all the casual fans and the bracketology and stuff that they went back.
Yes, they should.
Yeah. We'll come back right here on 3 and Out. Stick with us. You're listening to Fan Run Radio. Finally here, the SEC tournament starts for Tennessee tonight. We'll have voluntary reaction following the game. Make sure you stream that on the Fan Run app or through the website foxsportsknoxville.com. Jerry Palm, I guess he needed a few extra little extra sleep last night, but he's got it updated this morning, 7:30 a.m.
I mean, it's only 8:30. I feel like that's pretty good.
Most of the time, they just update it, like, overnight, like, as soon as the game's in. But seriously, I mean, that there are games going super late right now, because when you've got tournaments on the West Coast, you know, I mean, sometimes the West Coast will play games early so they can kind of be in the East Coast time window. But when you've got to play multiple games in a day, that gets tougher. But Jerry Palm does have it updated. He's got Florida in a play-in game, a first four game in the Midwest, is a 12 seed. And, of course, Florida and Alabama, they were on the wrong side of the bubble before the wins yesterday. Now they're both in the last four in.
He also has Alabama as one of the first four games.
Hmm.
Oh, I missed that.
In the Midwest.
Two SEC teams in a play-in game?
Yeah. He has Alabama playing Arizona State and Florida playing UNC Greensboro.
Poor Furman and Belmont, both on the wrong side now.
Both done, right?
Yep. Billis was, I mean, he was campaigning for Belmont. He was like, this shouldn't even be close. Belmont should be in. So if you're talking in-state schools here for Tennessee, he was pushing hard for the Belmont, what are they, Bruins?
Yes.
26-5 on the season. Their net ranking's 46. It's interesting you said the net's really helping these power teams. Like, I noticed NC State's net ranking's 32, and Jerry Palm has them first four out as well.
Right now, Joe Lunardi has Belmont as his last team in the tournament.
Probably means they're not going to make it.
Yeah. Unless everything goes
chalk. Yeah, because he has Alabama in the first four out.
Well, but see, that's the problem. Like, with Belmont and Furman, who are done, if these, you know, if Alabama beats Kentucky today, like, there goes that slot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening in other tournaments across the board. One thing before we get back to the bracket here, one good thing that happened for Tennessee yesterday is Texas Tech went down. Probably not a big deal, but I think that lets you know that at least the 1-68, even if Tennessee doesn't do too well in the SEC tournament, doesn't win the whole thing, they'll probably stay ahead of the Red Raiders, who lost to West Virginia, a team Tennessee beat. So I think that's definitely one that helps the worst-case scenario for Tennessee if you do have one of these cup-check moments in the SEC tournament. Now, as far as Tennessee's concerned with the bracket, they are still in the East as a two seed, and Kentucky is still a one in the South in the Louisville bracket. Duke's a two there, though.
Who's the one in our bracket?
Virginia.
Okay.
Man, they looked good yesterday.
Not in the first half.
When they hit threes, like, that's the problem.
Yeah, Kyle Guy, I think, ended up like 5 or 7.
That's why I'm starting to not like that matchup. Because we saw what Auburn was able to do, and I think I think we have kind of figured out that Tennessee probably matches up better against more old school opponents. What's weird is, you know, Jerry Palmy saw his Duke as a two. What's the committee going to do with the Blue Devils with Zion? I mean, okay, so we've checked off the box. Zion Williamson, is he healthy? Yes, check.
I'd say he's good.
Now, the next question is Duke more the first half team we saw against Syracuse or the second half team we saw against Syracuse? And tonight may just kind of answer all those questions for the committee.
Yeah, like whenever you're playing that zone against Syracuse, I'm a little reserved as far as how you judge teams because typically they're not going to be facing any more zones like that. I think Jay Billis made the point last night. He's like, you know, if you're Syracuse, when you do that, it's a really interesting strategy because you're always going to get the other team's second best offense.
Right.
You're never gonna have to face what they have in their pocket that's the best.
Well, he talked about apparently even Jim Boeheim when he first became a zone all the time type of guy. He said, you know, everybody practices their man offense. Their zone. I've never seen a zone offense that's better than a man-to-man offense. So we're just going to play zone all the time. And that's how it all started for Jim Boeheim at Syracuse. But I still think, like, in the NCAA tournament, when I'm watching that game last night, even if I don't play 2-3 zone, like, I'm structuring my man-to-man defense to do exactly what Syracuse did. Like, I'm letting Duke shoot the three ball. I'm just daring them to shoot it. And I'm fronting Zion with a guy behind. I'm helping off of everybody on the perimeter. I mean, Zion included. Like, you just don't have to do it. I remember one time I was coaching, we put down the trapezoid, like the international trapezoid, and we had three of our players practice for 2 days never leaving the trapezoid because we were playing a team that had kids that could not shoot the basketball, and it worked like a charm. Like, it's not just that you want to help on the other players inside that range. Like, you want to dare them to shoot. You want them, and even when they don't, it makes them feel uncomfortable. Like, if you have a kid catch the ball at the three-point line who's in that kind of tweener green light, not green light, like if it's a seven-footer that catches, like if it's John Fulkerson who catches out at the three-point line, he has
to do that.
He's never shot that all year. He's not going to shoot it. He's comfortable just catching the ball and moving it. But when a guard that's been guarded out there at least fairly well all year catches it and there's just no one guarding him, they're like, I don't know what to do here. Like, should I shoot it? Should I start try and drive it? But there's somebody standing at the free throw line for that. I mean, like, I'm taking. I mean, this is like when the zone read took over the NFL for half a season. Like, I wonder if good team, you know, Elite Eight, Final Four teams, how much do they deviate to try and match up with Duke? The problem in college basketball, a lot of these coaches who have better teams are going to say, no, we do what we do, and I think we can hang with them. That's why Duke might be even more susceptible to like a Sweet 16 loss because you have a team that knows they're outmanned and they try and do some crazy stuff and it gives Duke problems.
Palm right now, he has Syracuse as the 9 seed in the South, so they would play Kentucky if they were to win.
Tennessee's has been updated to VCU and Seton Hall in the 7-10 game. Yes, please.
Seton Hall,
sounds good to me.
Yeah. I can't think of his name. But they had a player who had 29 points in the first half yesterday.
Holy cow.
Guard one guy. Game over.
Yeah, that's what we've kind of struggled with.
Well, we struggle with different things at different times across the board, but yeah.
Only guys we didn't expect, like Petty and Okiki.
He didn't even start that game, did he?
No.
Did Okiki start?
It's crazy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Petty didn't.
But he had 20, what do you have against us, 24, 22?
Michigan has slipped to a 3 seed in Jerry Palm, and they're in our pod. I want Purdue. Where's Purdue?
This is going to be a real bummer because Michigan has been overseeded all year, and so now they're not really going to fall that far when they really should. They're just not very good.
So you want Michigan?
Yeah. I take Revenge Tour 2019. Right. Put them on the list.
Let's go.
I'm fine with it.
Florida State's moved up to a 3 seed. I don't want to see the Seminoles. They were Elite 18 last year.
Don't want to see them at all.
People forget that.
Question, Chris, Purdue's the 3 seed in the South, according to Palm.
That was my question, but yeah.
Oh.
We sound alike. Purdue with a 3, Michigan with a 3.
Florida State with a 3. That was the best game I saw all of yesterday, Florida State versus Virginia Tech. Mm.
I'm talking about like Big Ten though. Like, what's Michigan State? There are two right now.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah.
What's Wisconsin?
Four
in the Midwest.
Give me a break.
Houston's the final three seed.
Houston. You want Houston? Houston. Would you like to play Houston?
No.
Or Michigan or Purdue or Florida State?
Michigan or Purdue.
All right.
Easily.
I agree.
I'm telling you, I just don't think the Big Ten's that good this year.
I agree.
Normally good. Nominally good. Not this year.
Mississippi State's the six in Tennessee's pod. It'd be weird to play them.
It's funny
again.
That they're the sixth seed in the SEC tournament, and they're a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament.
Well, that's because naturally you have South Carolina as a four and out.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it makes so much sense.
South Carolina really making things make sense. Come on, Frank. Do the damn thing today, if you don't mind. Be fantastic. Is that the first game? It is, isn't it?
No. LSU's first.
I'm sorry, yeah. Who does South Carolina play today?
Auburn.
That's right. I'm trying to get my
Which bracket, SEC right. game are you most looking forward to outside Tennessee? It's LSU, Florida. It's Auburn, South Carolina.
Kentucky, Alabama.
Yeah, Kentucky, Alabama. After that, I've seen Florida, LSU twice. It's been a pretty good game each time. Probably, though, I want to watch South Carolina and see if they can beat Auburn. Just because I really don't care about LSU or Florida if we were to meet them. Don't care about South Carolina if we were to meet them. Auburn being out of the tournament on their second day would be kind of awesome. That would feel pretty good. Had a lot of Auburn fans yesterday jumping in my mentions because I mentioned Bruce Pearl did not grab and grope Laura Rutledge during the halftime interview. If you remember the Aaron Andrews halftime interview against Memphis.
Okay, so
he got a little touchy-feely.
So he
and he had that same kind of grin and smile on his face, and I just thought, oh, no, don't touch her. And he didn't. He held back, and I said, good job, that's mature. And I guess Auburn fans name-searched Bruce Pearl during halftime of Auburn games, and they were all like, oh, still bitter over last weekend. I was like, no, it's a joke that Tennessee fans would get, but since you've only been following basketball for a year and a half now, you probably don't understand that.
Well, Laura Rutledge is your girl. I know you're going to take up for her.
We're friends.
Yeah.
Not really. We tweet nice things at each other.
Shoot your shot.
She's married to a guy who plays for the Red Sox. No one knows this.
I believe in you.
I was serious. Like, I would expect him to take up for Laura Rutledge. They're, you know.
No, we... She gives me off-the-record takes on Florida stuff because that's where she went. What is it with Florida producing tall, blonde, good at their job? Didn't Aaron Andrews go to Florida? And Jill Arrington and Laura Rutledge?
It's a recruiting pipeline for...
Now we know why.
Sideline reporters, I guess.
Oh, I thought... Never mind.
What?
I was going a different way with that.
Huh.
But no, I just thought, you know, Bruce did a good job not being a creep. Sometimes he's a creep.
Aaron Andrews, Florida.
Really?
From California, though. Very strange. Okay.
Her parents probably paid somebody to get her in there. You know? All those California parents.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I think parents will want you to stay closer to home, though, right? So that you can visit and stuff. They might have paid to get her away, like boarding school.
No, that's what I'm saying. They were like,
God, we gotta
she's in too deep here in California. We got to get her. We got to... Send her to a safe southern town like Gainesville, Florida. Yeah, that's the one, Mom and Dad. But it worked out for her. Actually, worked out for all three of them. They've all been insanely successful.
Tennessee's a two seed in the East, according to Joe Lenardi, as well. Colgate, Louisville, and Oklahoma in the pod.
Still Virginia as the one?
Still Purdue as the three and Virginia as the one, yes. Kansas and Marquette, 4-5. I don't know. What's weird is that Palm and Lenardi have a lot of this stuff preset, and you can kind of see some patterns, but all of it's pretty much worthless because if you change one thing, like if the committee sees one thing differently, it could change those whole – like you have some similar patterns with similar teams, but all the teams' names could, you know, could change.
For today's games, as it stands, LSU is a 57.5% favorite over Florida. I don't know that I expected that. No line on that game, however, yet. My guess is they're waiting to see if there's going to be some late announcement on Javonta Smart or Will Wade.
Do you want to get into that other LSU stuff that might be happening a little later on?
Maybe there's just no lines on any of these games yet, which seems weird because the first one tips off in about no time. No lines today, I guess. Seems like you could do that pretty quickly. That's kind of a surprise. The first one made sense. Kentucky, an 88.1% favorite over Alabama, really giving the Tide a good shot to win that one, which is weird considering they won the first matchup. Where was that game played? Either of you guys remember offhand?
Is it Tuscaloosa?
It was? Okay. Yeah. And then Tennessee against Mississippi State is 71.6% favorite. No line on that game either.
70, again, 30. It feels about right.
I gave the game plan about 2 weeks ago, and it is guard Quindary Weatherspoon, and everything else will be just fine. There's your game update. Guard, Weatherspoon, everything fine.
Breakdown. Matchups. The whole thing.
It's that simple.
All done right
there. It's just that simple with them. That's all you got to do.
Well, they had three players in double figures last night. It's Texas A&M.
Yeah, it's Texas A&M. And Texas A&M's awful. They don't have a coach. They're ready to get out of there. What did Weatherspoon have last night? He had 12. He's their third leading scorer. 9 assists for Weatherspoon, though. Got to get in the passing lanes. Mm. That's pretty good for him. I didn't know he was 5 of 6 from the floor.
Yep, we'll come back. Final segment, hour number 2. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio.
Fade it. Frank.
Davey, it's 8:50, man. I know it's Friday, but come on.
Basketball day. I mean, start early.
If you start pregaming now,
you still got 12 hours.
I guess you got time to take a nap. A long one if you need it. I'm going to probably need one today for this late, stupid, dumb tip.
You're not doing voluntary action tonight, at least.
Oh, but whoever is not waking up at 3:30.
What time do you have to get up? That was my next question.
Yeah, 3:30.
3:30?
Yeah. Got to leave here like 4:30. I'm the tournament director. I have to be there first.
Oh, I didn't realize you were the tournament director this weekend.
Yeah. Big deal.
Why are you guys having a tournament?
Kind of a big deal.
The same weekend.
We're not having it here. We're having it out of town. We're having it out of town.
But wouldn't that be like me throwing a huge basketball tournament in another town like next weekend? Kind of, when all the people that love basketball want to be watching, like, the other tournament? Like, you won't be able to watch your Bassmaster tomorrow.
No, because people who watch fishing would rather be fishing than watch it. People who watch basketball don't necessarily want to play basketball.
Mm. Okay.
Besides, Sunday is the final. That's the day that really matters.
Okay.
Yeah. So plus, they got replays and stuff.
Your tournament will be over.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Would you like to provide an update?
Tennessee will tip at what time, we think? 3:34 tomorrow?
On Saturday? Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, 3:30.
Probably about the time I'll get off the water, so that might be perfect. Yeah. Update, Dean Rojas leading, 4 pounds, 10 ounces. It's early. We need the sun to get up and warm the water.
That's great. What was the number again?
4 pounds, 10 ounces.
Well, they said they don't measure them on the boat.
It's a guess.
They just look at them and guess?
Yeah.
To the ounce?
Yeah, 4.5. Tough. So, yeah.
All right.
I mean, I guess it's possible he may have. Some guys do weigh them.
They want to know?
Yeah. Well, they have a scale that will weigh your fish, and then you can assign it a number so that you know exactly what it weighs. When you start culling, you can know, oh, number 2 is my smallest one. I can throw it away, replace 2 with this one, and they stay updated all day.
Seems
but
like
most guys just throw them in the box and do it by eye later. But it's a slow start today. I knew it would be.
Oh.
Because you need the sun to get up this time of year. It's a little cloudy this morning, too. Going to be a late afternoon bite.
Mostly cloudy today is the weather forecast. High 61.
It's weird to see all these guys fishing in spots I always fish. Like Drew Benton, he's fishing my childhood honey hole.
Really?
I'm not kidding.
All your
I don't
want to
give it
out.
Away, but if you're watching the video, you know exactly where it is. I'll go ahead and say. It's the back of Sinking Creek. The very back.
Oh, really?
Where Pellissippi crosses over.
Yeah.
Pretty good spot.
Yeah, that's near my house.
It's a nice deep hole, then a big spawning flat. Caught some big fish
How
right
far
where
back
he's
in
at.
There?
I mean, the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like by the bridge?
Yeah, just which bridge?
Well, there's the Pellissippi Bridge, and then there's the little
get through that little bridge if you have a small enough boat. I've done it before. There's big ones back there, too.
Wait, the little tiny bridge?
Mm-hmm.
You can go under that?
If you got a small enough boat.
Really?
Started fishing out of a John boat.
I don't know if there's enough
there
water back there right now.
No, not right now.
To get all the way back
there?
Yeah,
you got to go in the late spring, right when the water comes up.
You can get through there. People are always fishing down there off the bank, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just weird to see all these guys fishing spots. Like, I know exactly.
So where's
Where's who?
Is he like near the Pellissippi Bridge, or he's in between the Pellissippi Bridge and the end?
Well, he just went under the Pellissippi Bridge. Now he's throwing back underneath it, trying to fish the. It's deep right there where they built the you know, where they sunk the cement for the bridge piling. It's a deep hole right there, and that's what he's hoping that they're in. Wow. It's too early though. It's too early. Should have started somewhere else. Need the sun to get back on that water and warm it up. I tried to tell these people all week. They weren't allowed to get any information, but I'm just telling you. Today.
Could they have gotten information about like a month ago?
10 to noon. You will see this thing go crazy.
What's
10
the
to
reverse
noon.
Statute of limitations on information?
I have no idea.
Like, at what point, like, they announced,
it's going
to be in Knoxville in 3 years. Can they call Houston Crest that day?
I don't know.
Say, hey, just found out. Going to be in Knoxville in 2 years, 1 year.
I don't know. For the Classic, it's weird. I'm really not sure. I don't know what the rules are.
I mean, I'd be Googling local fishing guides in Knoxville, Tennessee. Wouldn't you want to just
talk to
everybody?
That's where everybody's fishing. They're just all over the lake.
Really?
I mean, they're everywhere. Yeah, you can see those guys right there. Just spread out.
I'm genuinely interested about this now.
Yeah, see, it's a very interesting thing.
How long does it take to get from Calhoun's to the back of Sinking Creek? That's got to be a pretty good hike, right?
That's probably...
About an hour and 15 minutes?
No.
I was just mapping out how long the show's been going on.
Well, there's a no-wake zone through there, so probably 30 minutes in those boats, I'd say.
How fast do those boats go?
Depends.
Depends
on how much gear they got.
Got it.
Depends on how fat the marshal. Are they have a cameraman or do they not have a cameraman? Do they have a lot of tackle or have they cleared it out to have not a lot of tackle? Do they have a lot of electronics or do they not have a lot of electronics? It's all these questions. Do they have a 23 pitch prop? Do they have a 26 pitch prop? Do they have a 4 blade prop? Do they have a 3 blade prop? Do they drive a 225? Do they drive a 250?
If it only takes 30 minutes, I might have to join the Vol Navy next football season. That's not bad.
Well, those boats takes a day, but it's a trip. You know, you're enjoying yourself the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. Those boats are slow.
Well, if it takes that boat 30 minutes, surely I can get there in an hour or so. In a regular boat, you know.
Well, this is weird.
Joyriding. Cruiser.
I was talking to a guy yesterday, said some people are going to fish the upper end of Teleco. Do you know how long that would take from downtown?
Whew.
It's 89 miles from Calhoun's to the Chilhowee Dam. If someone makes that run, you're talking, I'd say an hour and a half one way. So you're killing 3 hours of fishing, and you're probably going to have to stop and get gas on the way back.
When does
maybe not. Maybe you won't have to stop and get gas. I'm not sure.
When does the final horn today and tomorrow? Like, when does it end?
They officially launched at 7:40, so I would think 3:30 or maybe 4. Typically, it's 7.5 to 8 hours, but it's the Classic, so sometimes it's weird.
So my guess would be 3 hours. If you use 3 hours running, you've only got 5 hours to fish.
Mm-hmm. But if you're on them, it's worth it. And you're going to have it all to yourself.
You can get gas in these things. That's legal.
Mm-hmm. You can't get out of the boat. So a lot of guys will call or go to that gas dock before and say, hey, I'm going to be here at 9:15 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm not allowed to get gas, and I'm not allowed to get out of the boat and come get you. So can you please be out on the dock waiting for me with the gas pump in your hand at 9:15.
Yeah, I heard about one cheating scandal where I guess they weren't allowed to get gas and some guy like hidden stuff like all along these certain route or something. I don't know. Crazy.
I got my buddy, he's sending me all the spots. I'm like, yeah, man, I know where they're fishing. I know these spots. Chris Saldane, he ran to the canal down Davies neck of the woods. He's in Lenore City.
Went all the way down there.
Probably about
45-ish,
yeah. If he's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's going to be scary is if that wind gets up, instead of an hour to get back, it might be longer because you can't go. You can't run 80 when you got 3-foot rollers out there.
What if you make it? What if you don't make it back by the time limit? Disqualified? Penalty?
I think there's like a 5-minute window where it's a pound per minute, and then you're disqualified.
Oh, wow.
It's happened before. There was a guy 2 years ago, he was fishing tidal water, and the tide was coming down, and he just got stuck on the sand. And then the water kept going down, and he just had to wait for the tide to come back up. Brutal. You're just sitting there on dry land, not making it back for weigh-in. And then you got to wait 8 hours for that water to come back up.
Hope you had a lot of snacks.
You got to research this kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know how you get out of there. I mean, he's like, it's like mud sand, too. So it's not like someone could walk over there and grab him. You can't get to the bank.
No.
I think he just had to chill.
No, that happened to me one time with some kayaks at the beach. God, stuck on the wrong side of the.
Talk about $100,000 bass boat stuck in the sand. You're giving me a stingray kayak.
No, I'm just saying we had to get out and try and walk in that mud to get back to the other side of the little mud bar to get back in the main channel.
That's how tides work.
Yeah, cut your legs up because all the shells and stuff. Nasty,
brutal.
I know.
The damn moon.
How did you make it? Yeah, stupid moon.
So that's been your fishing segment today.
It's a slow bite this morning. I'm telling you, you need about 2 hours. Get the sun up.
So what's the updated leaderboard? You mentioned one guy's poundage.
Not a lot of guys catching fish. I'm telling you, it's still too early. It's just too early.
Why didn't they should have moved the start back. That way.
No, you don't do that. You go at first light, or at least right around there. Josh Bertrand is now leading. Apparently, he just caught a decent one. Four fish, 8.8 pounds. Pretty good. Dean Rojas has 3 for 4.10. Everyone else has 2 fish or 1. Again, you need 2 more hours.
So this is this your best five crazy. Today? Best five fish?
Yeah, what is best it? Five.
Okay.
And you can call.
All right. There you go.
I mean, all the best anglers haven't even caught a fish yet.
Bassmaster Classic, right here from Knoxville.
Boom.
You're not going to get this on any other show this morning. I'll tell you that much.
I believe it.
Could you imagine?
That wasn't disrespectful. I was just saying, like, I don't think anyone else is going to be talking about it because they don't have an expert like Houston Kress.
Are you sure it wasn't disrespectful?
For the most part.
I think intent here. We got to judge on intent.
It's like the targeting
felt
rule.
Felt disrespectful. Go to break for 3 minutes so I can reprimand you.